Welcome to another edition of Sports Inquirer Podcast. This is your host, E. Marcel Portout. Hope all of you had a good week so far. I'm looking forward to speaking with all of you today. We have a special guest in the house today. We have Condor Addison Gray, who is in the building, to give some analysis on the NFL Combine and some general thoughts overall that have taken place over the past few weeks of the NFL offseason. I'm also going to hit up some notes on the NBA, NHL, and some general thoughts overall on sports. So once again, welcome to the Sports Inquirer Podcast here on the Sports Inquirer Network. Back from our break, I'm going to formally introduce once again Condor Addison Gray.
How y'all doing?
All right. The first guest to the house. It's very exciting here on the network that we finally have a guest here that can give some analysis. I'm sure all of you have enjoyed hearing my monologues and diatribes on the world of sports, but it's also good to have a second voice to chime in on. So first thing we're going to talk about is just some general NFL thoughts that we just had a combine take place this past week over in Indianapolis. Lots of thoughts on that, guys. Stocks rose and fall. We're going to go over some of those, and Addison's going to add his thoughts as we go along. First thing, it was interesting seeing on the combine, during the offseason, you get some new analysts that come in, guys who have been fired by their previous teams, and you see them in the booth. As a Giants fan, I found it humorous seeing Mike Tenenbaum, who has, for the past few years, slowly downgraded the Jets over the past few years with the Tebow signing and the Mark Sanchez extension and just the general ineptitude of that franchise overall. Yet I see him in a suit and tie trying to analyze picks. Sad part is he actually did a pretty good job about it, especially when we talk about the linemen and what to look for with their footwork. I saw the video on the NFL.com network and saw all of that stuff. He actually did pretty good. But it's funny that guys take a break from general managing for a year or two and all of a sudden, you know, they're experts on that. Another thing, I'm an old school guy. I'm 31, but I've been following sports my whole life. And I look at myself as kind of a 70s and 80s kind of guy, looking at the league and just my thoughts on it. I don't know if it's a new school thing or with Under Armour. The uniforms are awful. I don't know what they were trying to go with. And what are your thoughts on that?
I don't really know. I mean, Under Armour, I guess it's a different thing with them, because I know Nike probably wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, it was like a two-sided thing. I guess in the front, they were going with like a camouflage. Yeah. And in the back, they had like a straight, solid color. And the shame of that is like when you have 300-pound men, you know, trying to wear the spandex and the gear, it's just not a good look.
Not at all.
And the sad part is, and they showed the stuff from last year, from in the past few years when they showed the videos, I thought those looked pretty good.
They did.
They had a solid color, but I don't know what they were going on with this year. And we're going to talk about another set of uniforms at the end of the show in our What Does Condor Think section that just came out today. And they're even worse than that. They kind of went old school, a little too bad on that one. But let's talk about some winners and losers that we had on there. First one I have is Klein Davis, and from running back from Arkansas, had an outstanding 2010 season, rushed for about, I think, 1,400 yards, did really well in the Bobby Petrino system, broke his foot during his junior year and missed the entire year, took a red shirt, and his senior year was this past year, and obviously with the Petrino issues and John L. Smith and the inconsistencies with the coaching staff, they had a disappointing year. But, I mean, the guy, he came in 225, 31 reps of the 225, and ran a 4.37. I know that running backs, he's probably not going to be a first rounder or a second rounder. But that, as far as guys are talking about taking chances on Lattimore and some other running backs, he'd be the first one off the board for me. Because you've seen what he's done at SEC level, and he's really made improvements there. I'm just going to run through these receivers real quick. Had Cordell Patterson, who I've actually seen up close. I went to the kickoff classic when NC State played Tennessee, and he was the best player on the field. And I think he's going to have a great future as a pro. Did, ran sub-4, did the 4.42, 37 introvert. Now, the West Virginia guys, Tavon Austin and Shedman Bailey, smallish guys. And it kind of tied into Geno Smith as well, too. Undefeated first half of the year. They all three looked like first-round potential guys, but they just fell apart that entire second half of the year. And but I thought the receivers did pretty well and redeemed themselves. Just in general, other guys, D. Milner proved himself to be a first-round talent. I don't understand, and we actually watched the title game together with Notre Dame and Alabama. We'll get to a Notre Dame guy and the section of guys who didn't do so well. But the positives, as far as Alabama goes, I thought D. Milner was one of the best players out there, and I saw some grades. I saw some grades of him that he wasn't a top guy, but he ran a 4.37, and they're saying, oh, he's not fast enough, but I mean, I thought he did outstanding throughout the entire year. So
he did good. Going back on the Nile Davis thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great running back. But if you really want to compare him to anybody in the league, he's not a big name, but Bryce Brown, running back for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Okay.
He came in a little later in the season, but he did have a great impact. He's very similar in size, but he's very productive.
Now, it actually brings us to a general point overall, and we're going to have you back when we get towards the actual draft, a few weeks before that. But what are your thoughts on taking a first rounder overall as far as running back goes? We saw Trent Richardson kind of, he even bit the injury bug. But just the way the league is right now, what do you think of guys, of leagues or teams trying to get first rounders?
It's a tricky situation. I don't believe you should use your first pick on a running back. I mean, there's so much talent out there with all these running backs. You're bound to get a great running back. And going back with Alfred Morris,
he was
a late draft pick, and he probably showed more. He showed more production than any of the rookie running backs. So
yeah, Doug Martin as well over at Tampa Bay. He was a relative late round guy as well. And you even saw also second rounders that made impacts with the LaMichael James and Doug Wilson, who I wanted to do much better as a Giants fan. And I still think he's going to be the best guy that crop. I'm holding out hope. He needs to recover from his fumbles, get that right. And he can't be crying first game of the season. But we'll get to that once the season starts taking off. So I thought those guys held themselves well. Oh, and Ogletree as well, just real quick. Obviously, if you're listening to this show, you know about off-the-field issues that he had at Georgia, being suspended for various reasons. The guy is a top 10 pick, and I say top 10 overall. And I didn't hear any issues from the executives about him being negative and being honest about his situation. So I think if he holds his act together and doesn't, he's a stay away from the friends and from the drinking and all that stuff, he's going to keep it going. Let's get to the losers. And obviously the highlight of the main guy of the position was Teo. I personally, and my biggest thing, I know he ran a really slow 40, and we all know about the off-the-field fake girlfriend situation. Well, that's been graded to death. The thing I did not like, well, when he came in kind of pudgy, well, I should say pudgy is not the right word. He came in a little light. It's kind of weird saying pudgy, but he came in about 10 pounds lesser than he's been listed at Notre Dame, which is pretty standard for a lot of it. By the way, if you ever guys look at a game day program, I've worked in sports information. Those are very much controlled by outside forces, coaches. I mean, the coaches definitely tell you what to put as far as weights and heights and all that stuff. So that's when you get to the combine, you actually get to see how much they weigh and how big they are and height-wise and everything. My biggest problem with him, though, was he looked really, really stiff in the drills. That was the biggest problem I had. And I know people say, oh, he's a game player, and he's not going to look really good at drills and all that stuff. But my biggest thing was, if you have a guy who looks like he has average or below average athleticism at his age, and I forgot who brought it up. I wish I knew. It was one of the experts out there. He said, if you're in this in any position, if you have minimal athleticism now, what's going to happen 5, 7, 10 years down the line?
Yes.
These guys have not played one snap of NFL football, and you see them struggling. So I don't believe, and even as a middle linebacker, I don't like taking middle linebackers in the first round as well, kind of like running backs. And the big disputes are, I mean, you've seen a lot of guys like Patrick Willis and Brian Urlacher and so forth, and even Luke Kuechly over at Defensive Rookie of the Year for Carolina. They've had some good runs there. And, you know, I'm talking about Ogletree. I just say he's a top 10 pick. That's obviously a first rounder. But with Teo, I mean, what do you think? I mean, I don't really look at his off the field stuff as a big of an indictment as others. I just look at on the field and just his Alabama game. I know it was one game.
That was the closest game he's going to play probably to the NFL. Alabama is a very great team. And when he was on the big stage, he couldn't perform. In Alabama, he was getting broke off on freshmen.
Yes.
Like, that's... If you can't stop a freshman that was in high school a year ago, what are you going to do when you have to tackle Adrian Peterson?
Yes.
Maurice Jones-Drew? I mean...
Go down the list. I mean, those are known guys. I mean, every year there's a... We talk about the new crop of running backs that come up. And just him handling the physicality of it. And he's kind of in a tweener position, too, because he's stuck at middle linebacker. It's not one of those things where you can stick him outside and see what he does as far as maybe going outside or different packages. You want him to be a three-down lineman. You want him to be out a linebacker. You want him to be out there all three snaps. And if you got to take him out for third down for pass coverage, that's not a good situation. So if it was my team, if I was early second round, I'd consider it.
I agree.
And I think that's where he's going to go. But, yeah, he did not have the best day. And the excuses, I did not like that either. Talking about, it was a lot of pressure, I was nervous, and all the other stuff. I mean, it's nervous for everybody, and you're doing drills in an empty stadium. It's gonna get worse.
Yes, it is.
I mean, it's gonna get worse as a player. So I thought he had a rough go at it. Just EJ Manuel, strong athletics, struggled with his throws, and I was gonna give the award. I was gonna give my workout warrior award. It's gonna be I'm gonna give it to somebody else. But since we're talking about quarterbacks, Tyler Bray, another guy from Tennessee. Y'all know I'm a Commodore. I'm not trying to talk bad about Tennessee. I actually like Tyler Bray at moments, but physically he's a first rounder. But you saw all the inconsistencies and all the issues. He had some off the field issues as well. Nothing as serious as some others, but he had to be disciplined several times. And he came in 20 pounds heavier than he did in the off season. Like, you know, than he played at. Yes. And you know, you just see all that. He just has workout warrior all over him. So I'd be very concerned. But EJ Manuel's another guy who has had a lot of athleticism and has struggled as well. And last guy, let's just say loser, and just about the general concept overall, we can get into this for a minute. Two top 10 guys who are going to be picked very highly. Star Lutulele, I always mess his name up. Star Lutulele, the D-tackle from Utah, and Jarvis Jones from Georgia. Didn't work out for various reasons. Star, I guess fortunately, if you look at it in the big picture, they found the heart ailment with him, and he was not able to participate. And he went back to Utah, and they say he's actually going to be able to work out again and resume practice and everything. So, good for him on the health and the life side of health, but he was unable to do any of the drills. And Jarvis Jones, who we thought was going to participate the whole time, I guess he pulled out on his own.
Yes.
And he's had some spinal issues as well, and he's been nicked up throughout his career. So those are two guys that are probably still going to be top 10 guys, but have their health risks, especially Jarvis Jones. I mean, you could argue he's maybe the best guy in the entire draft. Yes. I mean, I thought he was the best defensive player in all of football, and he led the nation in sacks and everything. So, I mean, he's an outstanding player. But what are your thoughts on actually seeing the guys in the combine working out? So you have some executives who don't really care, just want to weigh them and hide them and just talk, do the interviews and for their 15 minutes.
Yes.
And then some guys, and like Eric Barkley, I think you want, not Eric Barkley.
Matt Barkley.
Eric Barkley, former point guard for the St. John's Redmen. Anyway, Matt Barkley, he didn't throw. And you actually had some executives throw some negative shade on him or talk bad about him not working out. Yeah. So, I mean, what are your thoughts? I know you play a little bit, and hopefully in the future could be in the position of competing at that level. What are your thoughts on guys sitting out of the workouts?
I really necessarily don't like it. And as I should call him.
Yeah.
I know he has a heart problem, but I really think that's going to hurt his draft stock. Sure. If I were a general manager in this situation, I would draft a player who has a knee problem before I draft somebody with a heart problem.
Sure.
At any problem, at any time, Star can go down, and
right.
the heart is very serious. That's life threatening. That's knee really isn't. I mean,
yeah, that's what they were. I'm happy for him for the life side yes. things that they found. And you know, that's a good point. And a lot of guys have had this has happened before. He's not the first that has had been scanned because they go through extensive exams yes. for the combine, probably right. more than they go through for their college teams. And he's not the first guy that they've actually found, whether it's in the heart or, I think a few years ago, there's a guy with a brain issue that was found. And they found that, I think, at the combine or an NFL team doing a health exam.
Yes.
So it happens quite a bit. So he's not an exception to that rule. But at football side, yeah, it definitely will hurt his stock. You know, and as far as Jarvis Jones goes, yeah, I think that the team was surprised that he kind of pulled out right before the draft.
Yes.
So that was the biggest issue with him. And last thing about the combine, we hit some NFL thoughts. My Workout Warrior Award, every year there's one guy who comes out, and Darius Hayward Bay is for the new school guys out there. My old school guy is Mike Mamula, who was an average player at Boston College, average defensive lineman / linebacker. All of a sudden became a top 10 pick for the Eagles and did nothing in his career. So he's my old school guy.
Yes.
So Dontari Poe won it last year, and even watching all that stuff, he's at Memphis, and we're biased. We have a family member that plays for Conference USA team, so we follow a lot of those teams and see what they're doing. And Poe went to Memphis, and I actually saw a few of the games, was not impressed with his motor and his skills overall, but he had all-star legendary workout. Chiefs drafted him top 10, and I don't want to be hard on the rookie, but he had a disappointing rookie year.
Yes.
So there's always one guy out there that does that. And even the first day for this year, looking at the O-lineman, Terran Armstrong, O-lineman from Arkansas Pine Bluff. The guy is 6'4", 306 pounds, benched 31 times to 225, and ran a 4.71. That's video game numbers.
Yes.
I mean, that's video game numbers. That's like when you go out and you make your player, put them all like 98 or 99, and that's, you know, he's producing like that. You know, you make all your linemen like that. So that's one guy. And to be fair, actually, in this guy, and I said, I follow the draft. I'm not going to give you the Mike Mayock, Mel Kiper analysis like that. But they said he was going to be maybe a second or third round grade before the combine. So he's not a complete stiff. But don't be shocked if you see him drafted in top 15 or 20 as an O lineman, especially from a small school. So, I mean, good for him. His agent did a good job getting him invited, you know, to the combine. And just a quick note about that as well. I said I have a nephew that goes to a school, and they had no one at the combine. Yeah. That was unacceptable.
That was.
And I mean, I'm not going to put their business out there, the school that, you know, we're talking about. If you follow me on Facebook, you can put two and two together. But I just don't understand how you're from – I saw guys from HBCUs and even Division II and Division III schools.
Yes.
And even Vanderbilt. I'll call Vanderbilt out, darn it. Zach Stacy was the only Vanderbilt guy at the combine. One guy. We're better than that. But, you know, but it's just stuff like that. So, but just wrapping up the combine, it's always good to see a lot of those guys out there and doing their business. And I love the coverage. Years ago, you had to get random one-minute highlights on ESPN or maybe read in a newspaper how your team or how your local guy did. I literally watched 4 or 5 hours a night on my computer. I didn't watch all that much, but you get what I'm saying. A few hours of just kind of going through different parts. I avoided all the 40s, but I like seeing the drills and seeing the coordinators and the coaches make them do the passing drills and the catching drills. And as Condor always says, guys have no hands. And you go ahead on that. In general, wide receivers, the lack of hands is...
Well, it was very sad to see. If I have to call out two receivers that had a lack of hands...
Uh-oh.
Derrick Rogers from Tennessee Tech and Denard Robinson.
Oh, Denard, no. He's converting.
Converting. You're a quarterback, so he's already going to know the game.
Yeah.
I know it's hard to convert to a position as a receiver and then going to in the NFL.
Yeah.
But he showed a lack of technique when he was catching the ball. And Michael Irvin was commenting on him during the combine, just saying, and they even showed it. His technique was not very, it wasn't up to par with the rest of the receivers, and Derek Rogers was also not catching, and he's been a receiver for a long time.
Yep, he has been. And with Rogers as well, and he's at Tennessee Tech. I think all these Tennessee guys have off-the-field issues, or SEC guys in general. But he's another guy who had some troubles at Tennessee, was relieved, or he was let go from the team.
Yes.
And he found his way back to Tennessee Tech. But as a guy like that, you can't afford to have some struggles like that. So that's his thoughts on the combine. Just some general quick hits on the NFL. Looks like Tom Brady signed his extension, 3 years,
27 million,
which means he's going to be a Patriot till he's 40. So he's going to retire as a Patriot. I didn't like a lot of the other guys, even some of the former players, really kind of talking about getting in his business. As a growing up in New York, there are several rules that you live by. You don't talk about someone's family, and you don't talk about someone's money. You know, those are things, that's just general life, but, you know, I learned that at a very young age. So I didn't appreciate a lot of these guys talking about how, oh, he took less money, and he is going to mess up the future of the league, or the player's side of things, because he took a few less dollars, technically. You know, what are your thoughts on that? It's people just commenting on that contract and getting in his business.
They have to understand why he did it, first of all.
Right.
He did it to also have more cap space to sign his other players.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a sacrifice that most people will not make in their life of cutting money. But if you look at it in the long term, him making that pay cut could lead to them signing Wes Welker,
right?
Going out and drafting a corner, and which is really what the team needed.
Absolutely. And it's funny as well, you look at, they had a graphic of the guys who are going to count against the most of their team. I think number one was Eli Manning. I think two was Peyton Manning. The Mannings, that family is making money all day. And they had a few other guys up there like Ben Roethlisberger, Philip Rivers, and so forth. I saw Matthew Stafford was, I think, going to count like $20 million against the cap. If I'm a Lions fan, I don't like seeing that number as far as how much he's going to count against them. But as I said, and if you look at the details of the deal, you can look them up online, everything. He just took more guaranteed money as well. And that's really what it's all about. So while he signed for less money than market value, especially when you look down the line in 2016 or 17, he got more of his money guaranteed for right now. So, in the end, Tom Brady's not struggling. His agent and himself, he seems like a smart man. He's not going to sign a below-market deal that's going to kill him on that. Next thing, Alex Smith. They can't announce the trade for another few weeks, but it looks like he's going to be a Chief. What are your thoughts on Alex Smith going to Kansas City?
I actually think that's best for Alex Smith and the 49ers.
Right.
The Chiefs... they still need a lot of work.
Yeah, definitely.
He needs weapons. I mean, one player really, I guess in some cases one player can change a team,
yeah.
But he's still going to need a lot of help. The 49ers got a lot of draft picks out of it, will also help get some depth for them. And I see probably another Super Bowl run for them.
You know, that the numbers are going to have between 12 and 15 picks this upcoming draft,
yes.
Which I think is a record for a Super Bowl team from the previous year or the past year. That team, they're going to be forced to mess with, you know, if they get it right. But yeah, Alex Smith going, it was a move that you saw coming. Kaepernick, he made his presence felt. He's going to be their franchise guy, and they got a second rounder and I believe a pick for next year. So that's actually not a bad haul. As far as the Chiefs, they have to get their act together on both sides of the ball, and they have some decent players. I mean, they got Jamal Charles, you know, good running back. They've had Bo. They have some talent.
Yeah.
But just getting it together, they've kind of hit a cliff. And Matt Castle's probably going to be released. I don't know what you can do with him. He's going to be a backup somewhere. But I thought it was actually a pretty good move for the Chiefs, because you're not going to find a number one pick in this draft. And I know it talks about Geno Smith and Matt Barkley. When you're trying to talk yourself into it,
yes.
Not like last year when you saw
Andrew
two. Andrew Luck, Robert Griffin III, and then guys in the past few years that you've seen that you say, okay, this guy is going to be, he grades out as a franchise guy. You can't talk yourself into a quarterback like that, you know. And I think I actually like Matt Barkley and Geno Smith, and we'll get into those guys a little bit more. I think they both have good futures, but they're not number one overall picks type futures. Well, they're first rounders, but you know, anything beyond that would be a little much. So those are general thoughts on the NFL. We're gonna take a little bit of a break here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. We hit some notes on the NBA and NHL. All right, we're back from our break here on the Sports Inquirer Podcast Network. And once again, you can hit me up many different ways. We are on Facebook under the Sports Inquirer, on Twitter. Just look me up, Sports Inquirer, as well. Send me an email at sportsinquirer@gmail.com. And subscribe to us on iTunes. I know a lot of you out there like to have it on your little MP3 player and your little iPhone. You can subscribe to us so every time I do a new episode, it automatically will download for you. So definitely hit us up on all of those ways. And obviously the sportsinquirer.net is our main source for information. Just gonna hit up some general NBA thoughts. And actually the next podcast, I'm gonna do my NBA power rankings and go over teams more in detail, you know, as well. But we've had a lot of stuff happen the past few days. Last night we had Steph Curry going for 54 against the Knicks. And as a Knicks fan, I was very scared. I think and the Knicks need that win. But Golden State's been a pleasant surprise all year. And I actually was kind of going for them a little bit too, because Mark Jackson, one of my favorite players, he's a former Knick when I was growing up. So I like seeing his success. But Curry going 54 was outstanding. It wasn't as much as the Bernard King. He scored 50-plus twice in one season back in 84. Kobe, obviously, he had his 50-plus, and Jordan as well. But as far as the opposing players that have scored more than 50 against the Knicks, you're looking at Kobe, LeBron, Jordan, and now Steph Curry. I mean, those are maybe three of the best players ever by the time they retire. So he did a really good job and hit a lot of shots. And if he can stay healthy, get those ankles right, he is going to be an elite player. I've been telling y'all before, if you've been reading my post or even listening to the podcast, I've been telling you that Miami's still the best team, but their Achilles heel is going to be teams that can play defense and have interior play. And you saw that happen when the Heat, they did beat the Sacramento Kings in two overtimes. They won that game, and LeBron had 40 points, 16 assists, and did everything he wanted. But you saw numerous times during that game, you saw DeMarcus Cousins get in there and get offensive rebounds, get some tip-ins. That's why I'm so concerned. I shouldn't be so concerned. I'm intrigued by the Pacers and the Bulls in the playoffs for the Heat. Because, again, to the point, if the Heat play at their peak level, they're going to be hard to beat as far as the Eastern Conference. So we're pretty much looking at this stage of seeing guys that can give them a run. So I thought that was interesting, seeing the Kings. And I'm being a harsh critic of DeMarcus Cousins, but he finally played like a top five potential franchise center in that game. The game before that, speaking of Indiana and Golden State had a little bit of a scuffle with Roy Hibbert and David Lee. I liked that stuff. I like seeing some old school bass. Yes. I like seeing guys put some hands on each other. I'm mad they still got suspended for a game. That was a joke. No punches were thrown. So what if they went into the stands? That's the problem. And they didn't even go into the stands with the fans. They went to the side with like the cheerleaders and the ball boys and stuff. Yes. I like when they throw some hands. They didn't like throw punches. But, hey, they got some shoving. Those are two teams trying to compete. And yes. Lee's gotten so sensitive, man. You see back in the 80s with Kurt Rambis and Kevin McHale, and guys throwing punches and clotheslining each other. And they didn't even get thrown out the game, let alone get suspended. So I like seeing that stuff. Just two more NBA notes. It's a podcast, and I got to get my viewers up and my listeners up, so I will mention the Lakers as opposed to the Lakers. Actually, since we talked, let's see, what have they done? They got beaten up badly by the Nuggets, but no one's complained. No complaining. No Kobe talk, no Dwight Howard. I haven't heard from his mama or his brother or father, so no drama there, but they're still struggling. Dallas, too. I did not listen to Dirk Nowitzki saying that it's going to be a struggle for them to make the playoffs. He's pretty much through his... He's gone fishing, as they say. I think he realizes that they're like 5-6 games out of the playoffs this time of year. It's not going to happen. And I think... I don't have the stats in front of me right now, but that's been the first time probably more than a decade and they've missed the playoffs. But, I mean, he missed half the year, and they're struggling. And finally, Doug Collins, this is going to be his last year in Philadelphia. The stat that I actually found on ESPN, I'll give them a shout-out on it. He's not lasted more than 4 years at one coaching position his entire career, and he's year three of Philadelphia. And they had a pathetic 98-84 loss to Orlando a few nights ago. And that was the Sixers' sixth straight loss. Andrew Bynum hasn't even taken a free throw attempt or even checked in a game yet this year. He's having his knee issues and just general Andrew Bynum injury list. So it's looking like a rough go for the 76ers. And the sad part is, if Bynum is healthy, they do play that type of defense in the style of play that can give the Heat trouble. They gave the Heat trouble last year in the playoffs. Everyone thought that the Heat just kind of marched through the playoffs and had no struggles. But they actually dropped a game to Philadelphia. They dropped, I believe, one or two to Indiana. So there are teams out there that can give them a decent shot of it. But they're not going to do. And the Sixers have no hope going on with that. And I know Condor's looking forward to my NHL stat right here. I know he follows it religiously, like everyone down here in the South. When do you think was the last time we had an original six franchise finals? For non-hockey fans out there, the original six franchises are the Rangers, New York Rangers, Montreal Canadiens, Boston Bruins, Chicago Blackhawks, Toronto Maple Leafs, Detroit Red Wings, and Chicago Blackhawks. When do you think was the last time we had at least two of those teams, or both of those teams, competing in a finals against each other?
Many, many years.
Last time was 1979, and that was when the Canadiens beat the Rangers in the Stanley Cup Finals. And this year, with the little lockout and their season going on, and look up this stat too. I don't know this stat. This will be the first year probably gonna have all six of them make the playoffs in 1 year. And the point leaders in the East right now is Montreal and Boston. They're kind of battling it out. The Chicago Blackhawks, as of we're speaking right now, have still not had one loss in regulation. So, I mean, both of those teams have been doing all those teams are doing outstanding. Toronto, if they get their goalkeeping situation right, they've had some injuries there, but they're doing really well. Detroit, I was actually watching some of their game last night with the Kings. Detroit's always an interesting case, you know, with them. They're still kind of trying to figure out post-Nicholas Lindstrom, how they're going to figure that out. But they're going to be right there as well. They're the Red Wings. So I thought that was really interesting, just looking that stat up and seeing who the point leaders are. If there's one thing the NHL needs, is they need some marquee franchises, I think, to be in the finals to get the profile up. And the Bruins have won the Stanley Cup and the Blackhawks in the past few years. The Red Wings have won a few in the past decade and a half or so. But it'd be nice to see Toronto and Montreal get some Canadian teams. Vancouver's become the best Canadian team out there. But actually, it'd be nice to see those two teams get a shot at it and actually do pretty well. So I might whip up together some NHL thoughts for the next podcast as well. So those are some thoughts on that. Just some general news and notes from the world of sports in those two leagues. I'm going to take another break here on the Sports Inquirer Network and get to a new segment called What the Condor Thinks. Once again, welcome to the Sports Inquirer podcast. We are rolling along here. Since we have our first guest on the show, I just thought I'd whip up some general first thoughts on just the things that happened the past few weeks and call it What the Condor Thinks. So, Addison, I am going to name something that's happened over the past few weeks in the world of sports, and I just want your first thoughts on it from your perspective. Daytona 500.
It's actually a crazy wreck from what I've seen. I'm not a big NASCAR guy, but I've always thought that there wasn't enough protection, as if I should say, for the fans. Right. Those fences, those are elementary school fences. Those fences really, never thought they were going to stop a car if it came full speed in it, and then it proves that they probably did stop the car, but most of the pieces flew through. People injured, nothing too serious, life-threatening, but...
Yeah, no fatalities, but it's interesting, and As I said, I've been following racing in different forms over the years, and they've actually made improvements, believe it or not. You saw what the wreck. Yeah. Scary part is that they have been fatalities with fans in the stands with different car parts going into the stands. And I thought the fencing, and it's kind of sad saying this, when I think dozens of people were injured, several were in critical condition, it could have been worse. It really could have been. And I thought that the fences did a decent job, you know, with that. And then that actually was the day before the Daytona 500 in the Nationwide Series, the different league, kind of the secondary racing league. But yeah, I thought that it was good that the race kept going. I said it would be interesting if there was unfortunately a fatality. Yeah. If they would have had the race happen. We've seen races be postponed if someone passes away from the wreck. But yeah, you shouldn't be going to a race and have an engine or a tire flying at you.
That's true.
I mean, you saw the video. That's some scary stuff.
It is.
You know, as far as the wreckage. And we talked about the Daytona 500, the actual race, in my last podcast. What about Danica Patrick? Does that bring more interest to you, less interest as a younger fan?
I actually like it.
Okay.
Like I said, I'm not a big NASCAR guy, but I like to see change in sports. It brings more excitement to it, and gives people something to root for other than just the main. I'd like to also see other sports, sports that are mainly dominated by men, also have women, such as football, maybe a kicker, which is what is probably going to happen.
Yeah, and that's another debate for another time as far as the physicality of it. But you're starting to see some crossover with that. I think if out of all the sports, and we've seen hockey, there have been some goalies, there have been definitely in the minor league level. I think, and the show was actually on the MLB Network, I think a week or two ago, and I didn't catch it, but it was on the knuckle. I guess there was a MLB Network, there was a show. They're trying to find, the next knuckleballer. And they had a few women on there, a few, teenage or college-aged women that were getting professionals out throwing the knuckleball. And obviously, you're familiar with baseball. Knuckleball doesn't require as much velocity and so forth. So I think if there's any league you're going to see as far as the four major sports, you might see a picture, I think, eventually, maybe 10, 15 years down the line. It's going to happen. Speaking of women in professional sports, we had Ronda Rousey, and she got a lot of attention with the UFC. I know you kind of watched the fights a little bit, here and there. You kind of know the major players in there. Does women's fighting interest you, or does that just new perspective on it? Does that make you want to watch it more or less? Or?
I'm intrigued by that. I am interested in, not in a sick way, but I am, I'd like to see a women's fight. But as long as it's not like the fights you see all over the internet, just hair pulling, scratching. No. I'd like to see Rampage Jackson type woman.
Rampage. Fighting. Oh, that's my man too. Yeah, we like Rampage in Sports Inquirer Network. I thought that UFC did a good job promoting that fight. Rousey is an outstanding competitor. Carmouche as well. I mean, that was a really good fight. We talked about the last podcast, the breakdown of the actual fight. But I think it's going to, things like Danica Patrick and Ronda Rousey, I think it's a really good thing as far as obviously getting the female fans, you think sports is a male dominated industry, and a lot of people see on TV talking about as far as analysts are men, but there are a lot of women fans as well and women competitors. Yes. And we've had some crossovers as far as players doing well. We're going to have the Final Four coming, or the NCAA tournament. We're going to have, Brittany Griner and Skylar Diggins, and we're going to see a bunch of those players, and then go to WNBA, and there are athletes out there, so I think it's really good when you bring attention to those sports with them. Let's see, we had the SI swimsuit issue come out. Do you actually, and I talked about it a few podcasts ago, when I was younger, that was like highlight situation, that swimsuit issue. And just quick, I said the story before, and I'll say it again, my high school, we used to get all the magazines, Time, Sports Illustrated, Newsweek, whatever, anything you see at a typical bookstore. And being a sports fan I am, I used to get the Sports Illustrated one because, we struggled. We couldn't afford a subscription, but my high school had one, so I would read it and all of that stuff. They never had the SI issue out, and I actually protested that, had debates with my teachers about that. I was like, it's another issue. It gets a legitimate issue, and it is, but it seems like now, and I admit, I hit up some of the blogs and the websites, and you can you're two clicks away from seeing some women in bathing suits, stuff you see on sport, and then just in general, like the Maxims and FHMs when that was around, and all that stuff. Does it even on your radar at all, like that swimsuit issue?
Actually, you just saying that is the first time I've heard of that.
See, there we go.
These days with technology, a swimsuit issue coming out in a magazine, people these days, unless you're in your mid-30s or above, you're really not.
So 30s is an old person, is that
what
you're saying?
Well, no, I'm just saying with the youth these days, nobody's really, the internet has really taken over books, and it's just really coming obsolete.
Yeah, no, and it's kind of interesting just seeing the change in that. And the story is true about me protesting and not being at our high school, but it just kind of shows the general magazine industry in general. There used to be, you look forward to certain issues from the different magazines, even like Rolling Stone, they'd have like their top 100 albums of the year, and Sports Illustrated one, you'd had Time, they still do their Person of the Year or whatever of the year. But those are like appointment things, and now it's kind of like, oh, just a click. Oh, so-and-so got named this, or oh, there's a picture of so-and-so. So I just want to get a young perspective on that. What about wrestling being out of the Olympics in 2020? Is that even on your radar at all?
It is. I mean, wrestling, I wrestled.
Yes.
I did, and I like the sport. I don't know if you can take that out of the Olympics. That is one of the building blocks of the Olympics.
It's like the original Olympic sport.
It really is.
You read the Bible too. Matter of fact, probably in the Bible somewhere there's some wrestling. But if you a Latin geek guy was in high school, you'd read all about the Iliad, and I took Latin. You would see some Greek stuff. Their sports were pretty much like wrestling was like the sport.
Yeah.
And it's an original sport, and they're trying to bring some other sports in there that are less popular. I mean, rugby and golf are going to be in the next Olympics. And I watch both. Actually, I don't like golf. I'm not going to lie to y'all. I just can't do it. And that's why we're going to have another expert come in and talk about golf when the Master comes up and the different majors. Golf commentary is not my stronghold. But, I mean, but golf has a following, and people like it. I like rugby, too, personally, but if it's going to be at the expense of wrestling, I don't get that at all. And that's, maybe I'm an MMA fan, but I watch college wrestling as well, so I'm into that. And let's see some other things. Zach Greinke, the new signee for the LA Dodgers, who signed a new 6-year, $147 million deal with the team in the offseason. He had an interesting quote about why he signed with the Dodgers. I'm going to read it out to y'all, and I'm going to get Condor's thoughts, and we're going to discuss it. This is what he said. I could play for the worst team if they paid the most. If the last place team offered $200 million and the first place team offered $10, I'm going to go for the $200 million no matter what the team is. It's obviously the number one thing. I could play for the worst team if they paid the most. If the last place team offered $200 million and the first place team offered $10, I'm going to go for the $200 million no matter what team it was. Now, we're not dummies here. I mean, we're all businessmen or women out there, and we're trying to improve our lifestyles. And I think the whole "it's not about the money," you know, view, we've been kind of, I think when we were younger, or at least when I was younger, you didn't really know the contracts, and you didn't know a lot of the backgrounds. But now we all know it's about the money. But do you appreciate his honesty, or should he have kind of kept that to himself?
I really can't appreciate his honesty. He's just saying what most sports players who are free agents are mostly saying. Yeah. Well, some free agents are different, but a lot of people are going to teams because of money. And that's, the game has changed. A lot of people are playing for money these days instead of their passion for the sport.
Yeah.
Back in the day, it usually wasn't like that. You'd play because you want to play. And a lot of players that really love the game are going to play for, they would play for no pay if they had to. But Zach Greinke, that's obviously not his case.
Yeah, I mean, and I do appreciate it. I'm reading this on the fly. There's a second comment, and I kind of agree with him on this one. I personally didn't think he should be that honest about it. I mean, he could have worded that a little better as far as, and he got lucky too because the Dodgers are going to be a top contender for the World Series. Now, if the Pirates or the Royals, and it's interesting with him because he played for the Royals for a few years and made probably below market value. you know, as far as his, he grinded hard for them, was a Cy Young candidate, and the Royals are one of the worst teams in baseball. So now he's gotten a deal from one of the best teams. So it'll be interesting to see if the Royals or the Pirates, teams who have struggled, or the Padres came up to him and said, hey, here's $200 million, play for us.
Yeah.
I think it'd be tough for him. He kind of got lucky that one of the top teams gave him the money. So he's getting the best of both worlds with that. Now, he did say also the worst comment in the world has got to be when a guy who's getting $100 million says he wants to take care of my family. Of course, nobody needs $100 million or even half of that to keep their family going. Now, I kind of misread that at first. What I was going to say is I don't like guys who come up with the statement of, I'm going to do what's best for my kids, or I'm going to look at, remember Mike Hampton, former pitcher for the Rockies. The Rockies offered the most money, but he talked about the school systems in Denver, Colorado, and all these other things. And they usually talk about, oh, like the culture or this whatever. Just say honestly, it's about the money. Yeah. You know, and Kevin Garnett, he got a lot of flack years ago when he was with the Timberwolves. He signed the biggest contract at the time for the NBA, and his first statement was, it's not about the money. You know, you don't have to be blunt about it either way. Just a balance of it. There's a better way to finagle that. And the last point before we get to my little rant on kind of black athletes in 2013 with Black History Month ending today is Adidas just released their new uniforms to continue the assaults on college athletics as far as what things go. Now, I blame Baylor for this last year. They had those neon uniforms and with the shoes. And then poor Michigan, from earlier this year, that Ohio State game. I needed sunglasses to watch that game. The shoes I actually kind of liked. The uniforms, that killed me. Now what we're seeing right now is, and Condor and I are looking at Baylor, Notre Dame, Kansas, Cincinnati, UCLA, and Louisville. They have their jerseys, the top ones, look like the standard jerseys that they've worn. I guess the shoulder pads have a little bit of a leopard print, and the pants. If you remember from back in the 80s and early 90s, we had Zubaz pants, and those were like kind of I call them leopard print, or zebra kind of style, and their entire pants are in that color. I'm going to post it on the Inquirer probably later today or tomorrow, the picture of this, so y'all get a better picture. You just look it up about the Adidas sleeve uniforms. That's what they're being called. Personally, I think these are hideous. I like the tops, but the bottoms. You're Kansas and UCLA. You're elite all-time programs, and you're wearing this stuff. But what do you think, Matt?
Well, I'm 15. I'm young. And this is the new age. This is if you've ever watched a sci-fi movie from the past, you always see the future as being flashy.
Yeah,
and this is the future here. This is what's going on. But for, as you said, teams like Kansas, UCLA, I do think they're kind of slandering their tradition. They're changing it. They're not keeping it as it was.
And Louisville, too, by the way. Louisville, they haven't won many national titles as those other two programs, but Louisville is a acknowledged one, too. Even Cincinnati's had some. All of them have had their moments over the years, but you see all of these traditional programs, even Michigan. Michigan's had a strong field and Notre Dame, and just tying it over to the football as well. I mean, we've seen those guys. We saw Notre Dame with that little half. I don't know when they went to Ireland.
Yeah,
that thing.
The half. Yeah.
Now some of the throwbacks I do like. I remember Michigan when the home Michigan they had like that M in the front. Yeah. Like I liked those. Like those weren't too bad. Now, but I also don't. I mean, I do like some traditions, but I don't want too much tradition. We've joked
Open
off.
State.
Yeah, we've joked off the air about Penn State in the past and their uniforms. They put the names on the back.
Yes.
They're slowly getting there. Sad part about Penn State, they actually have a nice little they have a nice logo. They need to put that on the helmet. So I'm old school. I don't like that. I personally, and even like Indiana, you see them. They have like they've had the same uniforms forever. They have that. I like the white ones. They have the straight white with the red lettering, and that's it. The Roden ones, I could see some, the names on there, maybe a little bit of a different flow. And interesting thing, they're an Adidas school, I believe, as well, and you see they have not had, I guess they put the hammer down on that one. They're not playing that. And certain schools, you know, even like Penn State, they're a Nike school. We've seen all the Nike stuff, but Penn State does not mess with that at all. So I like the different uniforms. The socks are a little much for me, too. My pet peeve, and this will be our last point on the uniforms before we wrap the show up, and I've seen it on UCLA with Shabazz Muhammad and even Miami as well. I don't like guys who wear the shoes that are not the school colors. That's a pet peeve. Now, Adidas, they, and I've seen it on the soccer field as well, they're kind of going with this yellow and green thing. And Nike, they're kind of, Nike's kind of joined in as well. But I don't like seeing the Miami guy, and I don't know, you know, one of the Miami guys, and I'm not picking on Miami, I've seen other schools with it. You know, Miami colors are green and orange. No, they're green and orange. But he's wearing, like, the kind of like what Baylor has here, like the yellow sneakers. Oops. That I don't like. That's a pet peeve personally that I have. I don't mind the guys having different kind of shades of the colors. Like the UCLA, even Muhammad, I've seen them with the gold. And the colors are gold, but it's kind of a different shade of the gold that UCLA wears. That stuff I do not like. I see in the pro level, too. I like you think you stick with the team colors as far as that goes. That's my pet peeve when it comes to the basketball side of things. But yeah, it's just funny seeing these uniforms. And back in my day, and I've said back in my day like I'm a 70-year-old man, but back in the 80s and 90s, if they wore different socks, that we had that Fab Five thing, we talk about the black socks. Yeah. Black socks, that really, and that legitimately was something different than that 30 for 30, that's one of 30 for 30, but a little ESPN special. That really was a legitimate thing. Like, I remember talking to my friends about that, and we were trying to get black socks. That was a legitimate, different deal. Now, you see, half these guys have colored socks and uniforms. Yeah, Addison's rocking black socks now. I mean, that's the new thing. So, it's just interesting seeing how the uniforms have changed over the years and getting a younger man's perspective on it. I just think it's a little too much overkill for your program, you know, trying to do that. But, yeah, so we're just going to wrap the show up. With something that's ruffling my feathers, and that's going to be the Black Athletes in 2013 here on the Sports Inquirer Network. So I just wanted to touch on something I noticed in the past few days with February coming to a close. And obviously February is Black History Month. And it's interesting to see when you have all of the different sports programs. They do like their town hall meetings and different commentaries on black athletes over the years that have overcome adversities on many different levels. And it seems like a lot of the stories are from the earlier part of the new century, but from the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, and so forth. It seems like there's a cutoff when you get to like the 80s, outside of a profile I saw in Doug Williams, first black quarterback winning the Super Bowl with the Washington Redskins. A lot of the stories are from the eras of the Jim Browns and Muhammad Ali's, Bill Russell, Elgin Baylor, and so forth. Then you go further back, Jesse Owens, you know, and et cetera. And I was thinking about what would be the equivalent, I guess, of the black athlete of those times and what they went through, going through what they go through today. And I thought that the demarcation, kind of the crossover guy with that change, was Michael Jordan. We talked a few days ago about Michael Jordan's 50th birthday and all the attention that got with it coming up. He seemed to be like that first guy that obviously was a black man in the world of sports. And it crossed over on an international level as far as his race. It seemed like less of him being a black man and more of an athlete. And now we have some of the most prominent athletes in the world from in basketball with Kobe Bryant and LeBron James. NFL, there are a lot of guys. You know, in tennis with the Williams sisters. And you go overall, I mean, and Tiger Woods obviously is a minority. And they go beyond the scope of just fighting the oppression of the different laws and rules that were against them as black people. it's like beyond that. It's like that's forgotten, and now they're just international superstars. So going back to originally when you have these town hall meetings and the commentaries, you hear some of the older athletes critiquing the current athlete and saying that they're not progressive enough, they're not speaking about current issues that are out there. And outside of maybe supporting maybe the presidential election or saying who they're going to vote for, outside of that, you don't really hear much from them as far as political views. And obviously, there are a lot of political views out there that an athlete's influence could actually have an impact on. If a LeBron James or a Kobe Bryant or a Venus or Serena Williams commented on general issues that not only affect United States but international laws, I think it would have an impact. But is it their responsibility to do that? Wasn't the point of a lot of the struggles that a lot of the older black athletes made was for future athletes now in 2013 to be looked at as individuals and as athletes and just be looked at for what they do on the field and not be judged? It's kind of a twist because it's the older athletes, they fought for the current athletes to be in the position that they're in, yet they kind of want them to kind of regress back to a level that will get them judged in a way that the old athletes wouldn't have wanted to be judged in that way. So I just thought it interesting seeing how in 2013, where it's more important what shoe company you're represented by, or what soft drink company, or what your clothing line is that you're represented by, instead of who you vote for, or what your view is on terrorism, or segregation and things like that, or rights of different minorities and genders. So, how do we look at our athletes now in 2013? I think is the way that older black athletes would want us to look at them. But do we want more from our athletes? Do we want them to make those commentaries and have those opinions about what's going on? Because the minute that someone says that, and we've actually had the latest coming up now with gay rights and homosexuality. That's been, I guess you can look at that maybe now as the new civil rights movement as far as the athletes go. And would you have an athlete or a teammate who is gay or lesbian? Would, if they made a comment on that, or would they be critiqued by that? And I think we all know that if they made a statement about whether they were for or against that, they would hurt their bottom line. And similar to what we talked about a little bit earlier, this is a business. While they're athletes and we like seeing them on the field and playing, they're also humans and they also want to protect their brand and their industry. So I think in the end, we need to look at athletes as athletes, black or white or whatever, and just accept them for who they are as individuals. Once again, thank you for listening to the Sports Inquirer podcast. I'd like to thank Condor Addison Gray for coming to the show. We're going to have them on a lot more over the next few months. And once again, if you want to send your thoughts to us, please head over to sportsinquirer.net and leave your thoughts on the show there. Also, we're on Twitter, Sports Inquirer. Just look us up, all one word. Also, send us an email at sportsinquirer@gmail.com. And finally, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. Just look up the Sports Inquirer. We have a few episodes archived from the very beginning. So you can look us up and listen to everything from the start. So once again, thank you for listening to the show. We're going to have our next show up probably Sunday evening or Monday morning. So until then out there in Cyberland, good fight, good night.